Chapter 21. At that moment, a lot of things happened at once. The common people in the crowd began to scream in fear and confusion. A group of librarian thugs pushed their way down to the floor around Swickbin, who continued to sit and knit. King Dartmoor unsheathed his sword and turned to face the thugs. Grandpa Smedri and I tried to rush down the stairs to get to the monarchs, but were blocked by the crowds who were trying to flee.
"Hiccuping huffs!" Grandpa Smedri cursed.
"Follow me, Lord Smedri,"
Singh said, muscling up to the top of the stairs beside us. Then he tripped. Now, I don't know how you'd react if a 300-pound Mokian tripped and began to roll down the stairs toward you, but I safely say that I'd either, 1, scream like a girl and jump out of the way, 2, scream like a gerbil and jump out of the way, or 3, scream like a Smedri and jump out of the way. The people on the steps chose to scream like a bunch of people on some steps, but they did get out of the way. Grandpa Smedri, Folsom, Himalaya, and I charged down the stairs behind the Mokian. Prince Riker stayed behind, looking confused.
"This part actually looks dangerous," he called. "Maybe I should stay here, you know, and guard the exit."
Whatever, I thought. His father, at least, proved to have a spine. King Dartmoor stood over the body of his fallen wife, facing down the group of librarian thugs, sword held before him. The other monarchs were in the process of scattering away. It looked as if the librarians would easily cut down the king before we could reach him.
"Hey!"
a voice yelled suddenly. I recognized my Aunt Patty standing in the audience, pointing. As always, her voice managed to carry over any and every bit of competition.
"I don't mean to be rude," she bellowed, "but is that toilet paper stuck to your leg?"
The librarian thug at the front immediately looked down, then blushed, realizing that he did indeed have toilet paper stuck to him. He bent down to pull it off, causing the others to bunch up behind him awkwardly. That distraction gave us just enough time to cover the distance to the king. Grandpa Smedri whipped out a pair of lenses. I recognized the green specks in the glass, marking them as Windstormer's lenses. Sure enough, the lenses released a blast of air, knocking back the librarians as they tried to rush the king.
"What happened to the knights?" the king yelled, desperate.
"Librarians must have corrupted the Mind Stone, Brig," Grandpa Smedri said.
"That's the problem with having a magic rock that connects the minds of all of your best soldiers. Take down the stone, and you take down your soldiers. Kind of like how taking out one cell phone tower can knock out the texting ability of an entire school's worth of teenage girls." Grandpa Smedri focused on blasting the librarians with his lenses, but they got smart quickly. They spread out, forcing their way around the perimeter of the floor, trying to get at the king. Grandpa Smedri couldn't focus on all the different groups. There were too many. The room was a chaotic mess. People screaming, librarians pulling out swords, wind blowing. The monarchs were trying to escape, but the stairs were clogged again. Singh sat dazed from his roll down the stairs. He wouldn't be able to help again anytime soon.
"Alcatraz, get those monarchs out," Grandpa Smedri said, pointing toward the wall. "Folsom, if you'd help me."
And with that, Grandpa Smedri began to sing. I stared at him, dumbfounded, until I realized this gave Folsom the music he needed to dance. Both Folsom and Himalaya spun toward the librarians, knocking down those who had tried to push around the outsides of the room. I turned and dashed up a set of bleacher-like seats.
"Monarchs, up here," I said.
The seats here were empty, their occupants all trying to crowd out the other door. Several of the monarchs turned toward me as I reached the far wall. I placed two hands against it and blasted it with breaking power. The entire wall fell away as if it had been shoved by the hand of a giant. Monarchs rushed up the steps, wearing a variety of costumes and crowns. A man with dark skin and red African-style clothing. The Mokian king in his islander wrap. A king and queen in standard crowns and European robes. I counted them off, but didn't see Bastille's father. That was, apparently, because he was still down below. I could see that he was trying to pull Drowlin to safety. Unfortunately, she weighed like a bazillion pounds with all that armor on, not to mention the awkward sword strapped to her back.
The king must have come to the same conclusion as he pulled free her sword and tossed it aside, then began to work off the armor. I moved to go help, but the crowds had seen my new exit and were swarming around me. I had to fight against them, and it really slowed me down.
Grandpa!
I yelled, pointing. Below, my grandfather turned toward the king, then cursed. Folsom and Himalaya were holding off the librarians pretty well, so Grandpa Smedri rushed over to help the High King. I tried to do likewise, but it was slow going with the crowd in my way. Fortunately, it looked like I wouldn't be needed. People escaped out of the broken hole in the wall. Folsom and Himalaya handled the librarians. My grandfather helped the High King pick up Drowlin. Everything seemed good. Swickbin continued to knit quietly. Questions. They still itched at me. How exactly, I wondered, did the librarians get to the Kristin Mindstone? That thing must be freakishly well guarded. Why was Swickbin acting so content? Who had blown up the Hawkwind? It had to have been someone who would have been able to get detonator's glass into Drowlin's pack. Hers was the room that had exploded. I glanced at Himalaya, who fought beside her new husband, knocking down enemy after enemy as my grandfather sang opera. It occurred to me that perhaps we'd overlooked something. And at that moment, I asked the most important question of all. If there could be such a thing as a good librarian, might there also be such a thing as an evil knight of Crystallia? A knight who could get to the Mind Stone and corrupt it. A knight who could slip a bomb into Drowlin's pack. A knight who had been involved in sending Bastille out to fail. A knight whom I had personally seen hanging around the royal archives within a few hours of the swap. Oh no, I whispered. At that moment, one of the unconscious knights near Grandpa Smedri began to move. He lifted his head, and I could see a deadly smile on it. Archetis, otherwise known as Mr. Big Chin, supposedly the most accomplished of all the Knights of Crystallia. I should have listened more to Socrates.
Grandfather!
I screamed, trying to fight the crowd and run forward. But they were so frightened that I barely got a few steps before being pushed back again. Grandpa Smedri turned, still singing, looking up at me and smiling. In a flash, Archetis rose, pulling free his crystalline sword. He slammed the pommel against Grandpa Smedri's head. The old man went cross-eyed, his talent unable to protect him from the power of a Kristin blade, and he fell to the side. With his singing gone, Himalaya and Folsom immediately stopped fighting and froze in place. The librarians tackled them. I struggled against the flow of people again, trying desperately to get down. The seats on the north side were now completely empty, save for Swickbin. The grandmotherly woman looked up at me, smiling. She held up the afghan she'd been knitting. It depicted a bloody skull. Archetis turned toward King Dartmoor.
No!
I screamed. The corrupted knight raised his sword. Then he froze as a small, quiet figure stepped between him and the king. Bastille. She hadn't been affected by the fall of the Mind Stone, because the knights themselves had cut her off it. Bastille raised her mother's sword. I don't know where she'd gotten it. I don't even know how she'd gotten into the room. She had found a pair of warrior's lenses, but I could see from her profile that she was still exhausted. She looked tiny before the figure of the enormous knight, with his silvery armor and heroic smile.
Come now, Archetis said. You can't stand against me?
Bastille didn't reply.
I maneuvered you into obtaining knighthood, Archetis said. You never really deserved it. That was all a ploy to kill the old Smedri.
Kill the old Smedri. Of course. Bastille and I had assumed that someone had been setting her up to fail, so that she or her mother would be disgraced. We'd completely missed that Bastille had been acting as Grandpa Smedri's bodyguard. It hadn't been a plot against her at all. It had been a plot against my grandfather. And if you're wondering, no, I couldn't actually hear what they were saying down there, but someone repeated it to me later, so give me a break. I continued to fight against the crowd, trying to get down to her. It was all happening so quickly. Though pages have passed in this narrative, it had only been moments since Archetus had stood up. I was forced to watch as Bastille raised her mother's sword. She seemed so tired, her shoulder slumping, her stance uncertain.
"I'm the best there's ever been," Archetus said. "You think you can fight me?"
Bastille looked up, and I saw something showing through her fatigue, her pain, and her sorrow. Strength. She attacked. Crystal met crystal with a sound that was somehow more melodic than that of steel against steel. Archetus pushed Bastille back with his superior strength, laughing. She came at him again. Their swords met, pinging again and again. As before, Archetus rebuffed Bastille. And she attacked again. And again. And again. Each time her sword swung a little faster. Each time the ringing of blades was a little louder. Each time her posture was a little more firm. She fought, refusing to be beaten down. Archetus stopped laughing. His face grew solemn, then angry. Bastille threw herself at him repeatedly, her sword becoming a flurry of motion, the crystalline blade flashing with iridescence as it shattered light from the windows, throwing out sparkling colors. And then Bastille actually started to push Archetus back. Few people outside of Crystallia have seen two Kristen fight in earnest. The fleeing crowd slowed, its members turning back. Librarian Thug stopped beating on Himalaya and Folsom. Even I hesitated. We all grew still, as if in reverence, and the once chaotic room became as quiet as a concert hall. We were an audience, watching a duet. A duet in which the violinists tried to ram their violins down each other's throats. The massive knight and the spindly girl circled, their swords beating against each other as if in a prescribed rhythm. The weapons seemed things of beauty, the way they reflected the light. Two people trying to kill each other with rainbows. Bastille should have lost. She was smaller, weaker, and exhausted. Yet each time Archetus threw her down, she scrambled back to her feet and attacked with even more fury and determination. To the side, her father, the king, watched in awe. To my surprise, I even saw her mother stir. The woman looked dazed and sick, but she seemed to have regained enough consciousness to open her eyes. Archetus made a mistake. He tripped slightly against a fallen librarian thug. It was the first error I'd seen him make, but that didn't matter. Bastille was on him in a heartbeat, pounding her sword against his, forcing him backward from his precarious position. Looking dumbfounded, Archetus tripped backward and fell onto his armored butt. Bastille's sword froze at his neck, a hair's width from slicing his head free.
"I yield,"
Archetus said, sounding utterly shocked. I finally managed to shove my way through the crowd, which had been stunned by the beautiful fight. I skidded to a stop beside my grandfather. He was breathing, though unconscious. He appeared to be humming to himself in his sleep.
"Alcatraz," Bastille said.
I looked over at her. She still had her sword at Archetus's neck.
"I have something for you to do," she said, nodding to Archetus.
I smiled, then walked over to the fallen knight.
"Look, hey," he said, smiling. "I'm a double agent, really. I was just trying to infiltrate them. Is it true that you have a truth finder's lens?"
I nodded.
"Oh,"
he said, knowing that I'd been able to see that he was lying.
"Do it," Bastille said, nodding toward the ground.
"Gladly,"
I said, reaching down to touch Archetus's blade. With a magnificent crackling sound, it shattered beneath the power of my talent. Swickbin finally put down her knitting. "You," she said, "are very bad children. No cookies for you." And with that, she vanished, replaced with an exact statue of herself, sitting in that very position.